Welcome to Game of Bones podcast. I am Zach Louie, and I am also Hannah Panic, and we are here with George DiMaggio. George?
Thanks for having us.
David, it's really great to be here.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, David J. Peterson. No introduction necessary.
No introduction needed. Yeah, that was perfect. Let's set the tone with that.
Last time you were on our podcast, you kicked a door down on a stage in front of people at a convention.
Ah, yeah. That was good. I loved that because the preparation for that involved me asking a gentleman backstage, does that door actually open or is it just for show? And he said yes.
What went
would
through
that
your
have
head?
Changed?
Yeah.
I was going to say, would that have changed your approach if it did or didn't open?
I mean, it would have been a lot of fun to try to just push that whole wall down. But two things there could have gone wrong. One, I could have been unable to push down the wall, which is I think is probably likely. Or two, I did. And it, I mean, it could have hurt people, sure. But what I was more concerned about was it kind of screwing up the lighting. And I'm very big into lighting, kind of a lighting buff. So, you know, I didn't want to do anything that could possibly disturb the lighting that had been set up there because, you know, it wasn't A quality, but it was a solid B.36, and that's pretty good for a convention stage. So just wanted to keep it as is.
Don't kick the wall down in Nashville, though.
Don't kick the wall down. You just invited me to kick your wall down. I'm going to kick it straight down.
For those of you who don't know, David has created languages for Game of Thrones, which we know a little bit about on this podcast, Sci-Fi's Defiance and Sci-Fi's Dominion, the CW's Starcrossed, the CW's The 100, Showtime's Penny Dreadful, MTV's The Shannara Chronicles, NBC's Emerald City, and Marvel's Thor The Dark World. David is the author of Living Language Dothraki and Penguin's books The Art of Language Invention.
It's a long list of stuff.
It is a long, no big deal. Partial list. Oh, by the way, we haven't yet introduced, since everybody listening has heard her, my dear cat, Kelly.
Our fourth co-host.
Hello,
this
Kelly.
Evening.
She's on my lap right now. She likes to do this thing where she puts her body on my lap and then she rests her head and her two little paws on my armrest.
That is literally the sweetest thing I've ever heard.
She's very cute. All right. So we're here to talk about Starcrossed.
You've added a lot of shows since the last time we talked to you.
Yeah, and three movies.
And more down the pipeline. I feel like David J. Peterson is kind of the go-to person in Hollywood for language that create an immersive experience for the audience.
I guess at the moment, yeah, the window is probably closing at any moment. But for the moment, that appears to be currently the case, I suppose.
Can you say that because you're on a Game of Thrones podcast, that Game of Thrones is your favorite?
Oh, you asked me what one my least favorite one was.
That one was off the record, though.
Oh, I gotcha. Well, the crazy thing, if I knew it was off the record, my least favorite to work on was Penny Dreadful, but that is my favorite show of everything that I've ever worked on by far.
Really?
Interesting.
It's amazing. I don't understand how Ava Green didn't win Best Actress at the Emmys and the Golden Globes every single year. It wasn't even nominated. It just absolutely blows my mind. And I don't understand why that show wasn't nominated for Best Show every single year. It's like there was some thing about it where it's like, oh yeah, it's really, really great. But of course, you know, we can't nominate anybody in it because of this obscure rule or because of this person associated with it. And like everybody knew except me.
What kind of approach did you take in creating the language for that series? Was it one specific or did they have a world that you built out several cultures in?
Oh, so for Penny Dreadful, it was totally different. A total contrast from what I did for Game of Thrones. In fact, what I created for Penny Dreadful, I wouldn't even properly call it a language because of the nature of the project. Basically, it was supposed to be the Devil's Tongue, which within the fictional context of the show. Yes. Because, you know, it takes place on Earth. It takes place in London, 19th century London. And so the Devil's Tongue was supposed to be a corruption of human languages. It was supposed to kind of like be a weird amalgam of them. And you weren't supposed to be able to understand it at all unless you had the mark of the beast on you. And so, for example, there's a character, I mean, you don't ever see this character. This is somebody in the distant past within the show. was trying to unravel the mysteries of this language and went mad because of it and killed himself.
Damn.
The idea is that every single time you tried to figure something out about this language, the rug would just be pulled out from under you. So it's like the grammar would keep changing, the words would keep changing, nothing would make sense, but things would feel like they were starting to make sense. But just when that happened, that's when things would just be changed. And you could never figure it out unless you were of the devil's mark. So that was what I created.
Are you given specific direction? Do they say we want it to be very menacing and we want this to feel based off of what people expect to come from that kind of creature?
Yeah, basically they have an idea about what they want it to sound like more than anything else. And maybe also some ideas about what its structure should be like based on something that isn't relevant. And so I usually just ferret things out on my own. And so long as they're happy with the sound of it, then they're happy. But for the details, that's usually just me. That's just me reading the situation and figuring out what's most appropriate.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious because I know in preparation for Con of Thrones, we've been talking and planning a lot of things, and not just in conversation with you, but from another artisan that creates for the show. The language Skroth has come up more than once, and I know that we've talked about it in relation to stuff happening at the convention, but with the news that HBO released through Entertainment Weekly last week that the producers of the series, George R. R. Martin and HBO, have 4 spinoffs on the horizon.
So as part of our preparation for the episode, we asked our listeners and people on Watchers on the Wall questions that we could ask you. And a question that came up quite a bit is about these languages that we know exist in the universe, but we haven't seen yet, whether they've been already created or not, and kind of what that might have to do with spinoffs or the future of the story.
Well, I have no idea if we're going to see any of the stuff I created specifically for Game of Thrones that never made it in. What I do know is that if I were to work on any of these prequel things that are going on, my guess is that if there would be any language bits that haven't already been created that would be called for, they would probably be created anew. Just because, I don't know. For starters, like 2 of these projects, like the ones for the White Walkers and one of them for Ashai.
Oh my gosh.
I just know a lot more. Yeah.
She just, okay.
Yeah, I did that. But yeah, I know a lot more about the series now. Mm-hmm. Both because just, it's been a longer time. I've had longer to work through the books and everything like that, but also just because there are more books now. And of course, also more story as has been revealed by the show. So because of that, I think I might take a different take on them. Just do things a little differently, except for maybe the White Walkers one, since that one is just so weird.
That's what I was going to ask about, because you were talking about creating a language for the devil, for Penny Dreadful, and I thought that must have come with some pretty direct directions as far as we want it to make sense from a language perspective, but can you please make it sound scary? When HBO presented you with the idea of Skroth, I gotta, like, that had to have been very specific.
No, I mean, honestly, the more esoteric these things are, the less specific it is. Basically, they just say, well, we have this idea, I don't know, maybe these guys can speak a language. And basically, they just say, try to wow me. And then when my stuff doesn't make it into the show, I figure, well, I failed.
Guess I didn't wow them.
they were not wowed. And that was honestly always what I assumed for the White Walkers stuff. I mean, I created something and, I had a very specific idea in mind that was based on the description of the sounds that the White Walkers made in the books. And I tried it and I put something together and I was kind of happy with how it came out. And I sent it off, and then, like, literally, I haven't heard anything about it since you were telling me that somebody on the show said something about it.
Yeah.
that's it.
Yeah.
That's all I get. So, I don't know. I just assumed that, I sent it off, and they listened and kind of, like, had a good chuckle about it, and maybe said, you got to hear this dumb thing that this guy did. Naturally, we're not going to do this.
What about Ashai?
That, I don't know. Like, I think maybe that was just kind of a crosshair type of thing. I don't know, or crosswire. Like, I created stuff for it, and I created, like, audio and dialogue for it. But then, I don't know, like, it just kind of gets buried. You don't really hear anything. It's all background. There's no obvious words. There's nothing that I can tie to the original recordings that I made. So, I don't know. Either maybe by the time they got to post, they just forgot about it. Maybe they didn't even bring the actress that played Miri Mazdur back to do that. They just had some random singer do it. I really don't know. But I always figured that that one was just, you know, they decided not to go to the effort or have somebody learn real lines and do that since there was going to be singing involved. That's just my guess. But I never heard anything about it.
That would have probably been Miri Mazdur doing the spell in Drogo's tent.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that was what it was created for.
And for the Skroth, that would be the opening scene, most likely.
Yep. Yeah, the very opening first scene of the series.
I feel like it can't be on you. Those are creative choices that deal directly with the scope of the project, of the show, and maybe they just thought that White Walkers shouldn't talk, that they should just stare and be scary at people.
Which is frankly what I thought beforehand while I was making the language and afterwards. I did not understand why they were asking me to create like any sort of linguistic element for what the White Walkers were doing. It just didn't make sense to me. I was like, no. I mean, and then of course, you know, you don't want to bring too much realism into this, but just from a realistic perspective, I mean, they couldn't do that. I mean, they're all messed up, man. They're all cut up and everything, and then they're all frozen and stuff. They couldn't do that.
Well, I can imagine with a series as big as A Song of Ice and Fire and with a show as big as this is and the amount of language and dialect that's part of the whole world building, that quite a bit of stuff, you know, doesn't quite make it to the final product.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure that everybody who works on the behind the scenes aspect of it, everybody has several stories like mine. Just because, I mean, as big and as long as the series is, there's still only 10 hours per season. So there's got to be stuff that gets cut. You know, like this, all this material that's in the books, like the plot and characters and stuff. A lot of that stuff has to get cut. Poor what's her face? The one that still doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that there's Quaithe? Lady Stoneheart.
Oh,
you're saying Quaithe?
I thought you might have been talking poor
there's
Quaithe.
There's so many things. There's so many directions that could go into.
So you're not a Lady Stoneheart fan?
No, it doesn't make any sense. I'm just going to say this. I want to see where on earth George R. R. Martin is going with this. I have to feel like we're going to get it in the next book since, you know, the fifth one ends at this crucial moment with Brian or Brian or however people want to pronounce her name.
Brian.
Yeah, that's how my boy says it. The guy who does the audiobooks, whose name I've conveniently forgotten.
Roy Dotrice.
He's a genius. Roy Dotrice, yeah. He says Brian, then it's Brian.
He says it with vigor as well. He says Brian proudly each time he says it.
Oh, it's wonderful. Love her in the books. And so, yeah, so of course, there's a very crucial scene with her in Lady Stoneheart at the very end of her story in book five. And so, you know, it's going to be exciting to see where that goes. He does those cliffhangers well, that George R. R. Martin. I will give him that. I mean, I have no idea what word it was she said. And this still isn't a spoiler because you have no idea what I'm talking about if you haven't read the books. But I bet like everybody on, you know, the Song of Ice and Fire forums, they just knew immediately. It's like, why do you even do that? We all know what you said. I'm like, dicks. Always so smart. You're way smarter than I am.
Speaking of spoilers, I think we should probably just get this out of the way.
Yeah.
This is a question from Sue the Fury on Watchers on the Wall. She asked, can we look forward to any new or surprising languages in Season 7? Were there any significant expansions on Dothraki or Valyrian for the new season?
No. I mean, it's not like, I mean, there's a ton of language in there, but no new languages. You know, of course, there's always vocabulary that's being added, but I mean, not a ton. The vocabularies are pretty big. So they kind of can handle whatever gets thrown at me. I mean, there was a significant amount of dialogue, so you can look forward to that. And I'm always just adding words, like especially now that I'm doing this Duolingo for High Valyrian, I'm adding words for High Valyrian all the time. As I recall, gosh, you know, it's been so long. Let me just look. Like, what did I even do?
You can just send that over if you'd like.
Yeah, I'll just send that right over your way. Let's see, season 7. Let me just look at the amount of stuff I have. Okay, so you know, there's some stuff for episode 7. Not much for episode 6. Not much for episode 5. Not much for episode 4. Oh, there's a good amount for 3. Good amount for 2. Oh, damn, nothing in 1? Oh, bummer. All right. Well, we'll see. So, yeah, there's a fair amount, a goodly amount, a good enough amount, but no big new stuff.
This may be a stupid question. I don't know much about language building and what work kind of goes into it, but when you have a chance to revisit each season, the different languages, you're obviously creating new vocabulary for it. Is there anything else that you tweak, or does much of the structure change as you spend more time with it? Or do you kind of set out from the beginning with a specific structure and then stick with that throughout the whole time that you're working with this language?
This is a good question. I mean, the basic answer is yes. The basic answer is no. The structure doesn't change. The grammar is pretty set. But the interesting thing to me is that a lot of the grammar for the languages that we speak are embedded in the verbs. The verb is what drives the sentence in every single language. And so as you create new verbs, you may be creating new grammatical paradigms in this sense. Like, take two words, eat and devour. These are two words that mean roughly the same thing. Just devour means, you know, do it more vigorously, but they instantiate two entirely different grammatical paradigms,
right?
Because of what you can do with one and can't do with the other. So if you just line up a whole bunch of sentences, are like, okay, is the meaning for this one importantly different from the meaning of this one? Can you say this in both of them? So like with eat, for example, you can say, I'm eating an apple. You can say, I'm devouring an apple. So, same thing. They both work exactly the same in those respects. They just have a meaning difference that's based on the difference in the meaning of the verb itself. Then you could also say, I'm eating. You can't say, I'm devouring. Why not? I mean, nobody really knows why not. You just know that that is absolutely the case, that people all the time will say, I'm eating. And basically, it kind of changes the meaning of the verb to, like, I'm participating in an episode of eating, or I'm like eating a meal right now. That's something that you can do with eat. It's not something that you can do with devour. There is a wonderful linguist by the name of Beth Levine who cataloged every single possible kind of verb frame of English. That is, all of the verbs that can work exactly the same way. And there's, I forget exactly how many, but it's over 100 of them. It's like close to 150 of these different verb frames, verb types, where it's like, you can use this verb in this way, this way, this way, and this way, but you can't use it this way. So she explains the type and says, here are all of the verbs of English that belong to this class. And, all right. And so obviously eat and devour belong to different classes, just two of like over 100 of them. So when you're creating new words, creating new nouns usually doesn't mean anything because the nouns, they don't drive grammar. They're more objects of it. So it's like, whatever, you create new nouns, you create new nouns. But if you create new verbs, every so often you will be creating kind of a new corner of grammar. You'll be creating a new verb that causes the language to work in a slightly different way than it has for any other verb that you've ever created. So even though the basics of the grammar are set, you know, all of the grammatical forms and the basic way that the subordinate clause works and relative clauses work, you may be creating new and unique bits of grammar just by creating new words. So then that is the more sophisticated yes answer to your question. So very good question.
So it's always kind of shifting and moving. I like that.
I think that would be putting it too, too, what's the word we want? All three of us, we can't think of this word. I'm including broadly. You in the sack.
Too general.
Broadly. Too general. Yeah. Okay. So it's like, It's almost like, imagine like if you just smash a mirror with a bowling ball, there's like a great big, you know, impact right in the center. That's very big and very noticeable. That's the bulk of the grammar. And then as you start to add words like this, those are the little cracks on the edges that may be incrementally, you know, eking their way out and making the big crash slightly bigger.
Okay.
Yeah. So definitely, yes, still expanding, but not like in a huge, like, you know, earth-shattering way where it's like I create a new word for season 8 and suddenly High Valyrian doesn't work anymore. It's more like it's just adding more nuance, adding new corners to the grammar.
When you're creating for a language like High Valyrian that has roots established, I'm assuming mostly through nouns in the series pre-existing.
Yes.
Do you have specific cornerstones? Let's say if it's Dothraki, mm-hmm. do you know that there's a list of verbs because of the impact that they make on grammar that you need to prioritize over the others and make sure that it fits better?
I guess the best way to look at that is there are a small number of verbs that tend to be used over and over again, language to language. But of course, each of these is going to work differently in the context of a given language. So every single language is going to have a word for giving, but how it's instantiated is going to differ from language to language. So you always need to know you're going to get there, but you have to do it in such a way that it's going to be unique and, you know, make sense within the context of that grammar. And of course, the more commonly used a word is, the more meanings it's going to accrue, at least with the verbs, not necessarily with nouns, but definitely with the verbs. So these big ones, they're usually very, very basic. So things like, you know, give, put, turn, go, you know, things like that. That's where you need to know, all right, this thing needs to be there and we need to figure out exactly how it's going to tessellate out for this, for a given language. Like, you know, just a short example, since I brought up give in Dothraki, there's just really a basic word for give, ajat, and it works kind of similarly to the way you think a word for give would work. In High Valyrian, there's two different ones. The main word for give is really only used when it's personal. That is, when the subject or object or one of those two things is either first or second person, that is I or you. If you're talking about some third party, then you use just an entirely different verb. It's something that languages can do. It's not something that all languages do. It's just something that I decided I wanted to do with this language because of some of the other things that I was doing with it. Basically, it's, you know how the whole Chekhov thing, it's like you put a cannon on the stage in act one, then you better fire it, you know, by the time the curtain closes.
Yeah. That's so, a good way like, to put it.
Yeah. So in Valyrian, I created this system that makes use of a couple of different applicatives and also this distinction between whether the agent of some sort of action is animate or inanimate. And so if you create that system, you want to have reasons for it to exist. It's got to be there and it's got to get used. And so that was one of the things I did early on. And yeah, it does get used a whole lot. It's just in there. Type of thing that you wouldn't notice unless you're studying the grammar. And the type of thing, of course, it's going to be gone by the stages where you get Bravosi and everything like that. It'll just be lexicalized. But for High Valyrian, it's very much active. So that was just one of the reasons why I did that.
This kind of sort of plays into a question that we got from Old Nance Pie from Watchers, who asked basically if there's a specific language, and then I'll also expand the question to a specific structure or whatever that has the biggest impact on your creative process, your creative thinking as you kind of approach this creation of a new language.
No. Not at this stage, no. Mm-hmm. It's just sitting down and figuring out what you want to do with a language. You know, you just think, well, what do I want to do? And then you do it. Mm-hmm. It's really as simple as that. So Yeah, you don't even need to think about other languages anymore. If you're doing something that you're unfamiliar with, you might take a look at a language where some specific phenomena is or phenomenon is present. So you can say, okay, well, how to, you know, like you know, just a simple thing. Like, let's say that you wanted to really use a lot of applicatives. You wanted to have more than just one applicative, and you wanted it to be very, very important. A question that might emerge is, how does this interact with relative clauses? And so then what you might do is you might go to languages that make robust use of applicatives and see if that system interacts with relative clauses at all. And if it does, how? And then, you know, can look at a couple different languages and compare and see what kind of variation you can get. Then again, if you've seen it already, you don't need to go back and look at it. So I guess that's where I start. I just think usually it starts with some sort of grammatical phenomenon. I think, what do I want to do with this language? What would be fun? And so then I set about doing it. And I evolve the language in such a way that it's going to do what I want it to. If I ever need to look at something else, then I'll go and look at it. But most of the time at this point, I don't, or at least I don't look up things specifically for reference. In general, you know, I'm constantly studying languages. I'm always picking up new languages and trying to see what they do, what new stuff they have, you know, just for fun.
Today's episode is brought to you by Adam and Eve.
Are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? Been fantasizing about surprising your lover with an adventurous new toy or adult movie? Well, here's an offer you won't be able to resist. Go to adamandeve.com, and for a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item.
But that's not all. Oh no. When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs for a little inspiration, plus a free extra gift so sensual we can't mention it on the podcast. And to top it all off, they will even throw in free shipping on your entire order. And no, they're not kidding.
So check out adamandeve.com today for this special offer.
Get 50% off one item when you type game for the offer code upon checkout. When you do, you'll get 3 free DVDs, a free extra gift, and free shipping. Just use offer code game at adamandeve.com. That's G-A-M-E
at adamandeve.com.
We'd also like to tell you why Dollar Shave Club is awesome.
Dollar Shave Club is a smarter choice. Get a great shave at a great price, conveniently delivered right to your door.
It's an awesome life hack and no-brainer choice. You no longer have to schlep to the store to buy a cheap disposable razor that gave you a cheap shave, or spend a fortune on razors with gimmicky shaving tech you didn't need. And when I use my DSC Executive Razor with their Dr. Carver Shave Butter, the blade just gently glides, giving me such a smooth shave.
Their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter is transparent for a more precise shave and helps prevent ingrown hairs and fights razor bumps.
In full disclosure, about 4 minutes before recording tonight, Hannah was making fun of me for using our provided Dollar Shave Club razors to trim my beard while we were on the phone preparing for tonight's show.
I wasn't making fun of you for the Shave Club. I was making fun of you for the Jon Snow beard.
Thank you. For a limited time, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of their Dr. Carver Shave Butter for only $5 with free shipping. After that, razors are just a few bucks a month. That's a $15 value for only $5.
In your first month box, you get an awesome weighty handle, a full cassette of 4 cartridges, and a tube of their shave butter. After your first month, replacement cartridges ship automatically at their regular price. There's no hidden fees and no commitments. Cancel anytime you like.
And you can only get this offer exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/owns.
That's dollarshaveclub.com/owns.
With a series like Game of Thrones that is entering its 7th season, you've been working with the languages that you started with in the first season. New ones have been added. It continues to grow. But at the same time, you're also working inside of the books, the 5 published books. Again, you have the whole series to look at your work and how it was applied in the final stage. I'm just curious how it differs from the other projects that you work on that maybe are just movie specific or a series that could last for 7 seasons but hasn't yet.
I think the main difference for Game of Thrones is the tremendous responsibility that comes with knowing that you're working on something that is the adaptation of a book series that is first still being written, Second has a huge fan base. Third had a huge fan base before this show was even a twinkle in anybody's eye. Mm-hmm. And fourth, with an author who is, you know, alive, whom I know, who is very active in fandom and, you know, is still writing the books and who can still at any moment just write something that completely contradicts whatever I'm doing. If I cross him. So I have to be very, very mindful of this at all times. And just to the very, very best of my abilities, try to work within the system that was created rather than try to take chances. That actually helped with when I was developing High Valyrian. Because a lot of times when I was thinking, you know, all right, well, should I do this? Should I do this? Should I do this? I just thought, what would the fans be expecting? What would they like? And I would just say, you know, all right, no, fuck it. Let's not be clever with this. Let's just make it pretty. I think that the result has been something that should really look like what George R. R. Martin was imagining, or at least, you know, that's what I'm hoping for.
Have you talked to George about that kind of stuff?
Not in depth. He's happy that the languages exist. He's used them himself. He's very adept at using them. But it's the type of thing where, I get where he's coming from. It's a type of thing that is at the very edge of his level of interest for what he is doing with his own work. So he's happy that it exists, you know?
I would be so grateful for a conlinger like you working on the show because of that, because of how many languages and cultures he does have in the series, having someone, you know, creating for that on the TV series beside it. Yeah. It's like, it almost mm-hmm. like his structure is being built for him by an expert that yeah. cares. And I mean, it's a really cool thing, what's going on there. It's pretty unique. I don't know if this has ever happened before.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know either.
So no pressure.
Yeah, yeah.
Not another thing to add to your list of things to worry about.
I was going
to
ask off of that, how has your love of the story and your knowledge of the series over the years that you've worked on it compounded and influenced your work, if at all, when you're creating new words, new verbiage, et cetera, as the show goes forward?
I guess... the thing is, it's like usually I'm not even working in the areas I find most interesting. I've always wanted to do a Volantine language. I thought that would be really cool. I just love that section. I always wanted to do a Giscari language, but of course there would never be a reason to do that. I mean,
Four spinoffs.
Yeah.
It's deader than High Valyrian within the context of the fictional world. And I don't know, I just have to imagine that a full episode that took, no, well, actually, you know what? You're right. Spinoff, it might be cool to see the history of conflagrations between the Valyrian Freehold yes. and the Giscari Empire.
Yes.
That would be cool.
I was wanting to talk to you about that. Obviously, we have a million questions regarding season 7, regarding your actual work on the series and other movies and other TV shows. And of course, what we're doing this summer at Con of Thrones. But just as a fan of the show, I know that you've got to have feelings about this news and working specifically with it. I know you probably have more feelings than most people. And working so calculated with the text of the series, I'm just interested to know how you feel about this. And what do you think is going to come out of this extension of the Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire universe?
Oh, that specifically? I think that, to tell the truth, I think mostly what we're going to see is just we're going to see more Westeros than anything else, which for me is a bummer because I think some of the things that you see hinted at from Essos and from elsewhere are, if anything, more interesting. Like a couple of things that interested me most were just as I just mentioned, the wars between the Valyrian Freehold and the Giscari Empire, and then what became of it. And then also the arrival of the First Men and their interaction with the Children of the Forest.
Yeah,
that's something that cool. That's something that I find very interesting. Something that I find very uninteresting is Dorne.
Aren't you on the defending Dorne panel at Con of Thrones?
Yes, but I'm on the Con side.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm on the panel, but I'm on the Con side. Nothing about that storyline has ever interested me. either in the show or in the books.
Truth bomb.
I can't wait for that panel. I can't wait.
And the last thing I want to see is the history of Dorne. Just now.
I don't know if it's going to happen.
I put on my list, so I kind of like, over the last couple of days, have been thinking about all the different options. And one of the things that I wrote was they could redo Dorne and actually try this time.
What try? They did. This was the result of them trying their best with that awful storyline.
I'm on your side, so.
Thank you. I mean, more interesting to me actually would be the Iron Islands. That would be
cool. Oh God, yes.
Yeah. They got ships and everything. Now that's what we want to see.
What do you guys think about pre-Doom of Valyria lead up to? We can see the full strength of the Targaryen Empire. We've got the drama with the Free Cities before they were. You know what I'm saying? All the stuff that you were.
We've got
potentially, if we look out west, let's say the map still opens up the same show. We've got the children.
I was going to say something with a Shai would be interesting just because, I don't know, it's a cool area.
Yes.
It would barely tie into the show at all. I mean, you know, I'm sure George R. R. Martin would know how it would tie into some of the main plots of the show, but I just think it'd be cool.
Yeah, but that would be going back in time, obviously.
Yes, it would. Oh, now here's something totally different. I'm just pitching right now. So, you know, next time you see the HBO guys, you know, just let them know. Mm-hmm. Let them know I'm ready to be showrunner on this. So this is basically a Star Trek show set in the universe of Game of Thrones sometime after the end of the series Game of Thrones.
Is this Star Trek like, or is this an actual crossover?
No. I mean, Star Trek in its nature. So this is like in a time of relative peace after whatever happens in the final season, which I don't know. I think it would be hilarious if actually the White Walkers took over everything and civilization was destroyed.
And but, then our Star Trek people find the planet.
And they find a planet that just has one type of being, and they speak one language all over the entire thing. And it's like, that's why. But no, okay, assuming there's ushers in an era of relative peace after the end of this series, then I think something that would be cool is the new Queen Daenerys, fingers crossed, sitting on the Iron Throne, says, all right, we're rebuilding things in the kingdom, but we want to commission you, Sir What's-His-Name, to start to go and travel around this great world and see what there is to be seen. Go to Ulthos, go to Sorth, Sothoros. Yeah, Sothoros, whatever.
Sothoros.
Whatever they're all called. And let's see what there is out there. So basically, they have the same mission that Jean-Luc Picard and all them have to explore the galaxy.
I can get into this.
Except they're exploring the world of Game of Thrones.
I can get into this.
Exploring moral conflicts and trying to reshape the world with their vast intelligence.
Yeah, and then we find out that it was actually Daenerys Targaryen who invented the Prime Directive.
Well, that makes total sense. Wow. I'm over here writing down before our episode the Doom of Valyria and all these little notes. Like, oh, they'll love this. That's so much better.
Hey, no, we need them both. Come on, we're talking about four spinoffs here.
Yeah,
if you have four spinoffs, then obviously you can have eight.
There's no bad ideas.
Well, they've drafted four experts in the world of television to work on four different spinoffs, but do we think that it's going to net out to four? Or do we think we'll get lucky if we get one or two?
I don't think we'll get four. I don't think that there's enough. Well, I want to say I don't think there's enough material as I'm looking at my notes and I have like 40 different ideas written out here. But I'm thinking about what is something that a casual Game of Thrones audience would be interested in watching versus what would we be interested in watching. I think it's such a big difference. And so I think that one or two is a decently safe bet. But if we get four, I will be shocked.
The thing that makes me worry about it is that I think that you could get four or five or six or eight if we were talking about networks like, you know, like Sci-Fi, where they'll just say, you know what, that sounds like a good idea. We'll give you two seasons to give it a shot. HBO, it feels like because all of their shows are so high quality, everything has to be a home run or it's not going to be a show. And so I think they're going to be less likely to want to test the waters with something that just doesn't seem like it could be the next Game of Thrones, or like, I mean, just anything, or the next Veep or the next, Silicon Valley, like all of their shows are so crazy high quality that it just feels like they're not going to experiment the way that somebody like the CW would.
I'm kind of afraid that they're being pushed around a little bit by Netflix, though, because while Netflix doesn't create shows that are on the same scale, in a lot of ways they do, but they don't have the same, reputation as Netflix or as HBO.
Oh, geez. Netflix, you know, they have more than 500 shows and movies in production right now.
And all of the episodes are available right when you want to watch it. And every week there's a new tentpole, you know, series. And that's what HBO is kind of going face to face with.
Yeah, that's what everybody in the industry is going face to face with.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's a different world.
And we've got them wanting to ride on the success of everything that Game of Thrones has been. And so, of course, they're going to throw everything at the wall.
Yeah.
Looking off of that and seeing what other franchises that have capitalized on this, I'm thinking Star Wars, Harry Potter, the big ones. Star Trek.
Yeah, and like even the Lord of the Rings stuff, they haven't explored that fully yet. Something like Star Trek and Star Wars, I'd say yes. And I think, and I look at that and I say, why not have, you know, like an animated show that runs for like two seasons, you know, within the Game of Thrones universe? Why not? There's tons of possibilities there. You know, why not give somebody a shot and say, hey, can you come up with a kids show in this universe? And they say, I'll give it a shot. Why not?
Something that I think is interesting is the fact that all of these ideas are floating around and we're talking about prequels and sequels and kids animated shorts and whatever, while the actual written A Song of Ice and Fire work isn't finished. And so, and I know that that's a conversation that we've been having and will continue to have for likely years, but it's interesting to me how that plays into the different possibilities and that how that plays into how we're supposed to feel about all this new material that's being created while the actual quote unquote source material isn't done.
Man,
well,
I don't know if that changes your guys' thoughts.
Well, listen, if anybody's to blame for that, it's George R. R. Martin himself. Mm-hmm. I mean, before the books were done, he wrote other stories within the universe. So it's kind of like coming up with a prequel idea right now is basically continuing the tradition he started.
I just think it's so exciting. I don't see it as a bad thing. You should see the things that didn't make the Game of Thrones or the Con of Thrones programming schedule. Those were a derivative of a derivative. Like there's so much to get into and there's so much mystery surrounding everything because of the fact that we don't have those two books released. Phil wrote an excellent piece about the spinoffs and the ideas surrounding them. And he made a point exploring something like Robert's Rebellion may shine a new context on the story that we're currently exploring, because we would get a definitive answer of some of those events. If it were captured, we would assume that it was canon, maybe not book canon, but canon enough at least to relate to the show. And we have these two books yet to be released. So it's hard to say potentially how much of a definitive change it would make on those things. But we've got to kind of keep it all in mind because, like you said, Hannah, we've got these two books yet to be released. And now we're talking about a potential of at least four different things at once being thought of. And you got to know that with the scale of that announcement, that this is actually going to be a thing. I don't know if they're going to be simultaneous. Probably not. I don't know if it's going to be cereal boxes or if it's going to be an animated series. I'm not really sure. But isn't it a good thing that the books are still, because listen to how excited everyone is. We're recording right now in the middle of the night about this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Four different Game of Thrones serials. You think that there
we'll
could
talk about
be
a sugar high?
Oh, yeah.
Starkos and Lannisterios.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually hoping to get the little Valyrian swords, the different models.
Oh, Valyrios. Valyrios.
With collectible plastic Valyrian swords.
I love all of this. And I'm not in the camp of George R. R. Martin needs to stop everything he's doing and finish A Song of Ice and Fire. I don't believe that. But I also do feel like while I enjoy the fact that we're getting to watch the show progress as it progresses past the series, and I like those types of conversations that we're having, and I like comparing what we've got between the books and the show and all that kind of stuff, I don't want to stray too far from what he's trying to accomplish. You know what I mean? I get worried that the end game will stop mattering because, you know, I don't, you know what I mean? Like I just don't, I don't want to taint the story with something before it can even be finished.
I don't think it's going to affect the story too much. that is the story he's writing, specifically because he's had this thing down more or less for years. So, it's really like at this stage, all he's doing is just filling it out, what he's set up. So I'm not concerned about that. And I think that, this is only a problem for present day us. In the future, both books are going to be done. The show is going to be done. And the new people who get into it anew are just going to have them all at the same time. And they won't even think about it. I also think that when it comes to the books themselves, there are two different types of canon. Everything that is narrated directly in the books is definitely canon. But all of the history, all of it has to be taken with a grain of salt.
It's all through perspectives. Right. Yeah.
It's all through perspectives. And not only that, it's done in the style of what we would have done back in, in olden days where there's hyperbole. Mm-hmm. Maybe it wasn't exactly that long. Maybe it wasn't, that many people that got killed. That type of thing.
Oh my gosh.
It's just narrated in that style. So like you have to just keep in mind that stuff is, there's room for play there.
With that being said, exploring the children's conflict with the Andals or exploring the Seven Kingdoms before they were all united, stuff like that. We could have potentially, or the Doom of Valyria, or the beginning, the founding of what I sometimes refer to as the Dark Brotherhood, which is actually just the faceless assassins that live in the House of Black and White.
Right.
We could see a potential literal version, the not so flashy, not so storied. It didn't really happen that way. And because it didn't happen that way, maybe it was bigger or smaller in magical scale, who knows? But because it did happen actually this way, the story that you just watched, the show that you just watched for 8 years is totally different now.
Yeah. Hmm? Well, this plays off of kind of reading through what people have been saying about these new spinoffs. A lot of the arguments for or against specific storylines have been that, well, there isn't that much source material to draw from, so they can't do X, Y, Z, or there's not enough information about blah, blah, blah. And I totally don't think that should even be something that we should be thinking about because as we're talking about, the histories are so rich and there's so many different storylines and we're already moving past this written book series that I think that the possibilities are endless and it's less about what we already have and what we could potentially explore,
which I think
plays into that. So
all for that. I wanted to ask you guys if you think that they'll go backwards or forwards.
Backwards.
Backwards.
They have to, in my opinion.
I just wish that they would go forward. I don't know.
Me too. Cowards.
Cowards? Like,
how do you go forward with a story that's not done?
I told you how.
Well, he's right. David's right, though.
I know, but I just feel like, in this instance, I just feel like it would be so risky.
It would be, but could you imagine A Song of Ice and Fire? Not part two, but the falling action. That's if the world isn't destroyed.
Yeah.
But who's to say that's not going to be part of George R. R. Martin's story?
That's true.
I assume that when these books are done, that he's done with the universe entirely, aside from, finishing up some of the smaller things that he got going. I can't imagine that there's going to be like some new trilogy in the future. Nah, that's my guess.
So backwards.
I think that there's so much, as we've been saying, there's so much history and there's so much incredible backstory that we're all so interested in that I don't see a reason why we would need to go forward when we're already going to go forward anyway.
Well, I was going to ask if HBO would have prioritized the reveals, but they've had a show that's had a book series beside it the whole time with the answer to season 3, season 4, season 5 already there for the past several years. So no, that's totally moot. They might they could just do that.
Mm-hmm. So there's four of what we're saying, the best possibilities from that article that Phil wrote on Watchers and that have been kind of circulating around, which I think might be interesting to kind of touch on these four, because while I don't think they're the definitive only things, I do think that they're some of the four biggest ideas floating around them, and they're all backwards. So I'm curious to think about what you guys think about the probability of each of these. And the first one is the very obvious answer, which is Robert's Rebellion.
Wow.
Which I feel like is maybe cliche, but I would love to see it. I know that we've got problems because we've been seeing it a little bit in the last couple seasons, but I think that's kind of one of the obvious answers that people are looking to as a possible.
Yeah, there would be the casting spin-off of young Ned Stark, Rhaegar Targaryen.
Well, unless they were going to use the actors they already used.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
You could potentially cut wide to Dorne. I know that David loves it out in Dorne and have an Oberyn Martell. Maybe he's out in Essos.
Oh, God.
I mean, there's a lot there with Robert's Rebellion.
I hope that they would talk about just how things are different in Dorne.
Here in Dorne.
Tell us how it is in Dorne again.
Yeah, please.
I hear your wine is fantastic.
We get it.
Lornish wine is good.
Oh, man. But yeah, that Matt Aegon, they've actually, that's the crazy thing. They have actors for most of the main players in this.
Mm-hmm.
They've been on the show, even if it's just been in a very short flashback. But then again, of course, they've also started the tradition of just recasting whoever.
That hasn't really mattered so much. I feel like from that perspective, it's probably easiest for them to get a new audience engaged in an old story if it's people that they're already familiar with.
And we touched on whether or not that would make a change to the current series. And it's just kind of a shrug.
Mm-hmm.
I think we would be lucky. We're going to be lucky if they adapt any of this stuff because it's going to be, we know we're going to be interested enough to watch it. So that's going to be cool. But I don't know. Robert's Rebellion? I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's cool, but I like everything. So the next big idea that's been floating around, which I can't definitively speak on, is them adapting Duncan Egg and turning that into a whole thing.
The material's there.
It's set further back than Robert's Rebellion. It's set 70 to 80 years back from where the current story is. And we're not going to have as much character crossover. Phil wrote in his article that and reminded us that, yes, an adolescent Walder Frey does make a cameo in Duncan Egg. But I don't know if that's the character that's going to do it for folks.
Walder Frey?
They're like,
going to really get people going.
Walder Frey.
he's still the same guy.
They just don't explain it.
Yeah.
Have him act like a teenager and everything. It's just him as an older guy.
Well, this opens up the potential because we've seen them play with comedy so much in the series. It's a nice refrain from all of the dramatic political tension and sex and violence, of course. Do you think that one of these four could potentially be something more lighthearted like Duncan Egg?
Well, Duncan Egg is also, I feel like, could be more of an intimate story. You know, I think that we could really zero in on the two of them instead of having, and I know that, well, I don't really know, but I know that the story kind of expands broader than that with the world that they're in. But I think that it would be very easy to do something styled very differently because we've only got two. The story is about the two of them, you know, instead of having to worry about 10 billion characters.
Mm-hmm.
It could be an interesting, different take on a world that we're already familiar with.
Yeah,
there's so many possibilities. If you open up the traditional, very successful shows to the Game of Thrones universe, such as a hospital set in the Game of Thrones universe, and that's it.
Yes.
Just an old school hospital. Also do a funny / sexy / heartwarming show just centered on a brothel in King's Landing.
Please.
Mm-hmm.
Procedural over on the wall with the watch. Also, you do a Harry Potter on the wall.
Just do a Harry Potter.
Yes. All my dreams have come true.
Harry Potter's a genre to you, David. Just do a Harry.
It is. I mean, that's what it feels like when you're reading the books, when you're reading about John going to the wall. At the very beginning, it feels a lot like Harry Potter. You know, here are all the new recruits and here are the big...
The hero's journey,
it's
man.
It's kind of a shitty Hogwarts.
They've got Malfoy, got Snape.
The Kingsguard, just a simple procedure.
Okay, so the factions and the... So you're into like the blue-collar Westeros, basically.
Of course, all because those, like, that's the real TV. Story.
That's so true.
It's about, you know, how all these big things and these tiny decisions and petty jealousies, you know, affect the real people there.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think actually that's one of the biggest things that gets left out of the show. I mean, you see it in bits and pieces, but they just don't have time. Because they need to focus on all the major players. In at the crossroads. That's another one.
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah.
At that case, we need the hot pie, like the Office version of rotating cast of characters that are coming in and out of the end of the crossroads.
You call it so the Office. I call it Cheers. You know.
Different strokes.
I'd be so into that.
That was awesome.
Oh, yeah. A poor little Stark boy is, you know, of course, yeah, that is the Different Strokes story. It would, mm-hmm. it's Jon Snow, you know,
mm-hmm.
not Greyjoy. It'd be Jon Snow, just some, you know, some bastard is inherited or, you know, is adopted by a rich family and is raised as one of their own.
I was going to say, if we're talking about a TV series, can we do some sort of Friday Night Lights spoof? But then I realized there's no sports in Westeros.
No. Well, actually, this was the idea I was going with the kids show, where you just focus on a tournament.
Yes.
And you just kind of, but for a kids show, it'd have to be less bloody. For an adult show, it wouldn't need to be. But yeah, you focus on the tournaments.
Chopped, except for it's a tournament, and you get to just watch all the people try to make it through to the final round.
Like a documentary style, like reality yeah. show in Westeros.
Yeah.
Please, if you're listening, HBO, break the fifth wall. We need a reality show based in a fictional world of Westeros.
Yeah.
I don't know where they got cameras. Maybe they just turned the glass candles to the side. I'm not sure what the technology is for that yet because we haven't made it that far.
Yeah, they can figure that out.
But you've really opened up my mind on this one, David, because I haven't been considering other kinds of entertainment.
Yeah. And honestly, I would just love to see just a pirate show. In the Game of Thrones universe, but focusing on pirates on the high seas.
Yeah, that would rock.
Fantastic.
I'd be really into that.
If we go backwards, let's go backward. That's what I'm hoping. I don't really know how to cap off this part of the conversation, but that's just how I feel.
You're talking about Land of the Lost, man. Go right? back. Yeah.
Let's go all the way back. As far back as we can, at least. As far back as they're brave enough to adapt. That would be really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Dinosaurs in Westeros.
And there would be a whole lot of languages.
I'm already starting.
You heard it here first, folks. That's how the work begins.
We don't have owns to get for this episode, but we are interested and what you believe would be the best options for HBO and George R. R. Martin to move forward in choosing their topics, concepts, etc. for these new spinoff series.
We want your serious ones. We want your funny ones. We want your unbelievably outrageous ones. We want them all.
Even if they're kind of all the same thing.
Even then.
David, thank you so much for coming on. I know it's been a busy schedule between athletic training and getting ready for the spring season with Brock Manchin. I'm just happy that you made time to make our podcast tonight.
You know, thank you. And thank you for acknowledging Brock Manchin, a fantastic quarterback for the Cal Bears, who is still the quarterback in my heart.
Seriously, it was a blast to have you. So thanks for coming to hang out with us. And next time we see you, we'll be in Nashville.
That's right. Next time we'll be in Nashville. I'm really, really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to a number of very specific things. And I am not going to list them.
Hey, don't forget to bring your bathing suit, though. Insider tip.
Oh,
just don't ask questions.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Thank you for joining us. This has been we're getting so close to season 7, and just through our planning for Con of Thrones, it's been a real treat to have an open dialogue about some of this exciting stuff moving forward. And if you're on the fence about going to the convention, if you have the time free and it is something that you would like to do, please, please consider making a trip out to Nashville and joining us just for the sake of meeting someone like David Peterson, who's going to be there in full effect, kicking ass all weekend at the convention, not to mention everyone that's coming from the community and all of the insane cosplay stuff that we've seen posted online. It's just, I don't really know what to expect. It's going to be
the
series airs. It's going to be a wild, wild time.
It is going to be a constant party.
I'm scared, but also excited.
This is going to be so much party. By Monday, you will be aching. Every single muscle of your body is going to be aching. And you're just going to fall asleep and you're going to miss the entire season of Game of Thrones. Yeah. You will wake up in September.
So, you'd like to join us in Nashville, please head over to conofthrones.com, look at our lineup of special guests, and consider making the trip to Nashville.
What I'm most looking forward to at Con of Thrones after this conversation is the Dorne panel. So I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to that. So soon. But before we get to Con of Thrones, we will have more episodes of Game of Thrones, fingers crossed. And next time we're going to be talking about The Princess and the Tower and The Merchant's Man. So we've got tons of Dorne material to cover between now and
your panel. Can I come back to that episode, David?
So looking forward to it. And you can check out our reading order at afeastwithdragons.com.
Yes. And if you would like to listen to our new series on Howl FM and
our
Stitcher.
Our new-ish series at this point.
Yeah, we're on season 2 now. A new episode comes out this week. It is called Rewatch the Throne. You can find all the information for that show at rewatchthethrone.com, or if you subscribe to Stitcher Premium or Howl already, it's there. You can enjoy it. We're having a fantastic time.
We've not made it to Dorne,
so but safe. We will.
Man, you know what the coolest thing is about Dorne?
What?
The fact that if you don't want to, you don't have to read anything about it or watch anything about it.
Ladies and gentlemen, David J. Peterson, thanks for coming.
Appreciate it.
Before we go, we need to say thanks to Dollar Shave Club for sponsoring today's episode.
Dollar Shave Club is a smarter choice, so get a great shave at a great price, conveniently delivered right to your door.
For a limited time, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter for only $5 with free shipping by going to dollarshaveclub.com/owns. After that, razors are just a few bucks a month. That's dollarshaveclub.com/OWNS.
Kisha ati hakiyeri, afin ati hakiyeri.